The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome to another week of Need to Know, everybody. And my goodness, there is a bunch you need to know. I'm Kip Kiefer here on TKR and across the Apple platform. Always an honor and a privilege to come to you each week to give you my take on things. And I think it's something I hope you find worthwhile, because I find myself not being able to be stamped and dubbed. Somebody said something to me not too long ago about that I'm, quote, hard right, unquote. Well, I agree with that. I am always right, not hard right. But I'm not talking about the measures on the political spectrum. I call it as I see them. I call out just as many Republicans on this show as I do Democrats. And it's going to be part of the theme of the show today, because one thing you have to say going into this is, as you watch things unfold and Trump has come in, and I've said YMCA is fine for his funny little dance and it becoming sort of the theme song, but they really missed the boat, because they should have come in with the Miley Cyrus song Wrecking Ball, because that is the theme of this administration so far. Trump came in like a wrecking ball. He's gonna move it all, because what he's gonna do is just completely attack these institutions that have been allowed by indifference and money and influence to fester in Washington. We've been preaching to you about this from day one. If anybody listens to the show consistently, they know that I am not pro-Republican. I am not anti-Democrat per se, except for the tactics they use. But the bottom line is, this is one big cesspool of opportunism in Washington. It is not public service any longer. I think I gave you my favorite example of that at the eulogy for John McCain after he passed away. I can't remember which one it was. It might have been Lindsey Graham talking about his lifetime of public service. Okay, John McCain, of course, was a fighter pilot, was shot down, and was imprisoned in Vietnam for a number of years. That certainly qualifies for glorious service to the country and the sacrifice of a portion of his life in the worst possible circumstances. But once he got back to the States, once he got out of the military and began his political career, what John McCain provided to this country was not public service. It was like his payback for all that he had gone through. And not to say that a lot of that wasn't justified. He served his country. He had the ultimate sacrifice of short of being killed in action, but being captured and tortured and held for a long time. But when he got back, I lived in Arizona for part of a couple of years and witnessed McCain in action behind the scenes. He had his fingers in every pie. Anybody who had big money, John McCain was the first guy to step up and take their cause to heart and lead the charge to get legislation and whatever was necessary to make those entities go. And John McCain was a perfect example of what happens when maybe some people that go to Washington with the right ideals and principles really get off the wayward path, because the opportunity for self-aggrandizement and enrichment are so vast in this system. And it's really the antithesis of what the founders imagined for this country. And somebody had to go in and tear this stuff down. And the Washington swamp creatures are freaking out because Trump has done exactly what he said he would do. If you go back and watch any of the 50 or 60 rallies he had during the campaign, he said in every single one, we're going to go to Washington. We're going to get it in shape. We're going to get rid of all of this bureaucracy and all of this unbelievably non-productive, wasteful spending. A lot of that spending doesn't even go. You're hearing all these examples of these ridiculous places that all this money's going. But the one thing you don't hear is how much of it, they're throwing around figures in the billions of dollars. But one thing you've got to understand, it also comes back to the people who are representing you. These are people from your districts or your senators or your congressmen, the people in Washington who are accepting donations. I love that. When Tulsi Gabbard actually challenged, or I don't know if it was Tulsi Gabbard, it might have been Pam Bondi. In one of the hearings, somebody threw it back at Bernie Sanders, how many millions of dollars they're getting from whoever he was criticizing them about. And he immediately, those are donations. Those are campaign contributions. Okay, what's the difference? It's just constant of millions of dollars being sourced into these people. I've told you before, Maxine Waters, who's out in front of the Department of Education last week, screaming at the top of her lungs how this is a constitutional crisis. That's the buzzwords this week. It's a constitutional crisis. Maxine Waters represents Watts, one of the most economically strained districts in the entire country. And she doesn't live in Watts. She's just the representative. She lives in Hancock Park, which anybody from LA will tell you is one of the most exclusive neighborhoods, gated communities, massive houses. Maxine Waters on $170,000 salary for being a congresswoman lives in a $4.8 million mansion in Hancock Park. Now, do a little cipher in here. You can be like Jethro Bodine on the old Beverly Hills. We can do some gazintas. And I don't care how many gazintas you come up with. In a $170,000 salary scenario, you can't go buy a $4.8 million mansion. It just can't be done. Joe Biden, Mr. Joe Lunch Bucket Biden, who was in Washington for 50 years, owns two mansions, two estates in Delaware. He never made more than $175,000 a year in salary. Maxine Waters, also in campaign contributions, got busted a couple years ago because she created some kind of job for her daughter in the campaign structure and was paying her like $85,000 a year for a job that typically would pay $35,000 or $40,000, basically paying her double. This is the kind of abuse. So anytime you hear about the billions of dollars that are being wasted in Washington, remember, yes, they're going to ridiculous things like sponsoring Sesame Street programming for $20 million in Iraq, a Iraqi version of Sesame Street, where the characters are anti-Semites and the like, but all these pet projects. But the big bonus is the people that are taking the checks from those who are seeking the funding, and there are people all over the world raising money, channeling it into these people's pockets in exchange for them to support and fund these different agencies. And this USAID, which most of us had never heard of, I was vaguely familiar with it. John F. Kennedy created it in his term in 1961, at the same time that he did some other worldwide ventures to get American philanthropy flowing and improve relations around the globe. But USAID got hijacked a number of years ago by the Washington Swamp, and it has become the basic central location for funneling money that that is allocated by Congress and sent out all over the world when there's so much at home that needs to be done. But all of these monies that go out, you don't hear about of their gigantic, I think it was $70 billion last year that was distributed, that was allocated to this USAID. This is just a slush fund for all of these pet projects and for their own enrichment, because 40% of the USAID budget was allocated for administrative costs. That means salaries. That means equipment. That means travel. That means going to lavish retreats to plan and whatnot. 40% of about $70 billion. I can do those gazintas. That's like a $27 or $28 billion budget to run this stupid agency that doesn't accomplish anything, that supports leftist causes around the world, DEI, transgender, and even things like Egypt, who Bob Menendez, the senator from New Jersey, got busted recently for taking huge amounts of bribes from Egypt to be basically their spokesman on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Menendez was convicted and sentenced to 15 years in prison because he had gold bars and fancy sports cars and boodles of cash. He said he only had cash because he was raised, his family was from Cuba, and they used to have to hoard cash and hide it away so the government couldn't seize it out of banks. But he didn't explain where the millions of dollars he had in his house came from. Egypt has been a big player in Washington for a long time, finagling things. And USAID gave them a grant last year for $60 million. I got to get my figure right there. I had a little blank moment. But it was a ridiculous amount of money to promote Egyptian tourism. I heard a great line on a comedy show the other night. That is the ultimate pyramid scheme, which was a great line. I wish I could take credit for it, but I will say I heard somebody else call it that. But the bottom line is, why is a U.S. government agency giving Egypt $60 million for promotion of Egyptian tourism? And it may even be like $6 billion. I can't remember. The figure's outrageous. And I'm sorry I didn't confirm that figure before I started. But I think you get the point here. It's money being just passed around the world while we've got people still living in tents in Western North Carolina after the hurricane, when our previous director of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, declared FEMA doesn't have any more money. We can't really help you out right now. If that's the case, folks, come on now. We are in a real world of hurt when you've got agencies that are flailing money around, putting it in their own pocket for their own enhancement to go on these retreats to Hawaii or somewhere halfway around the world, Dubai, I'm sure. There's all those locations on the usual itinerary for the USAID. So that's the wrecking ball that had to be taken to this situation. Now, I talked about Democrats and Republicans. The difference is Democrats somehow, some way, maybe it's a loyalty injection, or it's like the mafia. Maybe they have a secret sacred ceremony where they prick their finger and mix their blood and have them hold a piece of paper. I'm thinking about all the old Costa Nostra rituals, but maybe they have that kind of ceremony, because once a Democrat gets to Washington, they don't have a mind of their own. You never see, except for now, John Fetterman in the Senate, who's coming back from a stroke and is probably the only rational thinker in the Democrat Party, because somehow they're not able to indoctrinate him completely. He's kind of a loose cannon right now, but they never have loose cannons. They vote in absolute blocks for every single bill they're told to vote for. In the U.S. House of Representatives, remember last year there were 14 or 15 votes before McCarthy had enough to win? And in every single one of those votes, every single Democrat, everyone voted for Hakeem Jeffries for speaker. Never a variance. Never once did anybody go a different direction, because that's what they're told to do. And they toe the line because the Democrat Party does not tolerate any kind of dissent. But think of the range of people. You've got people there who don't represent the interests of across the board Democrat voters. You've got the really wild lefties that want America basically just to be a global citizen, give away all of our proceeds and have our people live in third world conditions because we have it too good here is what they actually believe. And the extreme left wing just wants to tax every nickel you make so they can have more and more money to spend and more money to put in their pocket. And that doesn't represent the interest of somebody living in the inner cities, struggling to make ends meet, having their kids have to go to the crappiest schools imaginable with teachers who don't even make an effort if they even show up at all. And they're protected for life by these teachers' unions, which have become massively powerful and really have a direct pipeline into making overall policy in this country. It was the teachers' unions that basically locked kids out of school during the COVID pandemic when the evidence was crystal clear the children were not really able, or I won't say able, but were not likely at all to be transmitters of the disease or susceptible to the disease themselves. But they ignored the science, which they so often pivot to. Well, the science says they avoided that because basically the teachers' union wanted the teachers to get compensated and be able to work from home, just like all the government employees are now. Only 11% even come more than 2 or 3 days a week to the office. That means the overwhelming majority never show up at their office. They're sitting around in their sweatpants right now collecting a big government check from you and me, the taxpayers. The problem of it's gotten so far out of hand in Washington, it's absolutely ridiculous. So you've got the Democrats in lockstep, complete block voting. You'll never see a Democrat leave the reservation. They are going to stay right on board because they're told that's what they have to do to represent the platform of the party. And it's worse than ever now because they are in the minority. The voters have spoken. They have told the Democrats, look, we're not going for what you guys have been selling all these last bunch of years, because people in the inner cities and people that jumped to Republicans for the first time are tired of it. The only time they're interested in people, particularly people that are in tough circumstances economically and from a safety standpoint, security, that the only time they're interested in them is at election time. And then, okay, the Hayes and the Bard, we can ignore them for the next 4 years. That's basically the big problem right now, that people are starting to go, wait a minute, I get nothing out of this vote for a Democrat, because they don't care about those people. They care about their big gargantuan government. They care about their pet left-wing clauses, and they care about putting money in their own pockets. And that is their objective. Now, on the other side, the Republicans are equally as corrupt in terms of enriching themselves. There's no question about that. They play the check game. They play the little dalliances with all of the big pharmaceutical companies, the major armaments suppliers, all the usual sex suspects, the tech companies. Now, all of a sudden, you see the tech companies, they're on board on Team Trump. They were completely adamant that Trump was the Antichrist just 3 or 4 years ago. Now they see the wave of the country and they say, you know what? We're with you. We're with you, Donald. You got Zuckerberg hanging around the White House. Elon Musk, of course, buying Twitter and turning it into X to have a free speech platform. You've got the the Google folks, you know, everybody's engaging now with this White House because they see where the trend's going and they want to be on the winning team. Again, it's the age old adage, folks, follow the money. That is always the solution. Now, I have to rail about this a little bit too, as after setting that down, because the Republicans do not stay in lockstep. Republicans get to Washington and they go, hey, I'm a senator. I'm a congressman. I've got my own ideas of how this has to go. And you've got, I'm so sick and tired with seeing how Trump has rushed in and in 3 weeks has done more than the horrible 12 years of Democrat leadership, with the exception of his first term, where they basically stifled him in Washington by having him constantly under investigation or impeachment or false charges that cost you, the taxpayers, $50 million to have the Mueller investigation on Trump being a Russian agent. I mean, give me a break. His first term, he made so many mistakes. He trusted so many of the wrong people. That's why this Donald Trump was so dangerous to them. And they tried everything. They tried to bankrupt him. They tried to jail him. They tried to assassinate him. The Trump train was roaring down on Washington and they panicked like lifting a rock and seeing all the slivery, slimy creatures trying to avoid the sunlight, because they knew that the first thing he was going to do was take that wrecking ball and knock that rock into a million pieces. And that's exactly what's happened. But instead, and it is a slight edge in the House of Representatives for the Republicans, they have a comfortable majority now in the Senate for the first time in years, but you still see Republicans, I can't support the president and his agenda. I got to go a different direction here. You've got the usual suspects, the Thelma and Louise of Washington, Barbara Murkowski and Susan Collins from Alaska and Maine, respectively, voting against Republican nominees, always going on record with their skepticism of what's happening in Washington, because both of them are swamp creatures. They have both been riding the Washington gravy train forever. And, you know, you don't get that kind of break from the ranks in the Democrats. And now you've got Mitch McConnell, who just last year was the president of, was the minority leader of the Senate, and previously under Trump was president of the Senate. This was the guy who was carrying the water for the Republican agenda. Now he's voting against Republican policy because he's so old and so decrepit and so mentally, he's Joe Biden the second. This is the sequel. Mitch McConnell starring in old and decrepit and completely cognitively incapable, you know, and Mitch is just, you know, oh yeah, I vote no. Mitch is not awake long enough to even know what he's doing. He should not be in the Senate. There's got to be some kind of recall ability in states. If I lived in Kentucky right now, I'd be making speeches every week. So we got to get Mitch out of there. He's embarrassing the hell out of us. He doesn't know what's going on. And you've got people in the House too. I'm so tired of hearing it's going to be such a challenge in the House with that slight edge of getting everybody in line to support the agenda. Well, if they don't support the agenda, they're missing the most golden opportunity that they've had, and maybe the only one in the foreseeable future, because people are going to get fed up with them in their home districts. They were sent to Washington with a clear mandate: support the agenda, get this country back on the rails. This gravy train that the Washington swamp has been riding all these years needs to go, and we need to get rid of it. It's got to go. So, bottom line, folks, the Republicans are now like a bunch of cats. You got to herd them up. You don't know if they're going to stick with the program or not. The Democrats in this position are always lock solid, because whatever they do to indoctrinate their members, you don't have any individual thoughts. You do what the party tells you to do. The Republicans have never gotten that memo. And on some levels, you're glad of that. You want your representative to be independent, but not in this circumstance. You need all the shoulders to the wheel to make this transformation happen, because this country is in a mess. And we're not just talking about billions of dollars that are just historically wasted every year. All of these big multi-trillion dollar programs under the Biden administration, which was actually Obama the third term administration, all of these multi-trillion, I think it was 1.7 trillion for the American Inflation Reduction Act, which was the stupidest title ever because it did nothing for inflation and it certainly didn't reduce it. And the other one for infrastructure, I forgot what it was called, but it was over $1 trillion. All that money went to solar providers, left-wing supporters of the agenda. It's just a big money pass around. It's just, okay, we're going to allocate all of this money from the administration or for Congress. Money's coming in from all directions. And we need to distribute it to everybody who's on our team, not just in our country, but around the world. And anybody who's really in need in this country, people that have, once again, they're living in dangerous neighborhoods. Their kids are going to terrible schools. They have economic strife every single month. That's where we need to be helping people, our farmers, our people that are producing in our country, manufacturing. If the Trump tax cut is not reissued this year, by the end of the year, taxes are going to go back up appreciably for manufacturers, and we'll have nothing being produced in this country again. Trump wants to cut that. He got it all the way down to 21% the last term. He wants to get it down to 15%, because then companies around the world will not be able to resist coming to America for the lowest tax rate in the world to produce their goods. We can stop worrying about tariffs and trade deficits, because we will all be buying American, and that's the way it should be. The American consumer is a big part of the problem, because we want to buy stuff from everybody around the world instead, particularly our cars, instead of manufacturers right here in America. But if those cars are being made here in America, that's a lot of jobs, a lot of revenue, and a lot less importation, and that's what needs to happen. So just an overview. If you live in an area where you've got a Republican representative, call their office, text them, write them an email, whatever communications device you want to use, but tell them, get the hell in line. You don't have any thoughts on this. We've got to get this dragon slayed first before anything else can happen. Then all these guys can fly off in 500 different directions. We need the big bill to extend the tax cuts, to reform the government, to stop all of this wasteful spending. The meltdown they're having about Doge and Elon Musk is ridiculous. They're advisors to the president. He has every right. Elon Musk can't call anybody to a hearing, but the people on the Doge committee in the House, they certainly can. Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia is the chairperson of that committee. She's a flamethrower. She will definitely get to the bottom of a lot of this corruption. It's not Elon Musk. They're not a government agency. This isn't a constitutional crisis, which is the latest of the buzzwords that the Democrats use. It can't be a constitutional crisis when there's nothing in the Constitution about the Department of Education or the USAID or FEMA or some of the other agencies that are being targeted for massive reduction. The buyout offer to government employees to get them off the payroll is generous. But it's got to be reduced. There are 2 million federal employees. It's absolutely absurd. You don't need to run the government. The constitutional crisis was ignoring the writers, the authors of the Constitution, who feared a big, bloated, overpowerful government. And that's the constitutional crisis. And that's what needs to be addressed. It's not a constitutional crisis when you're eliminating things that the people who wrote the Constitution never envisioned. And that's about 80% of Washington now, and about 100% of the ridiculous spending that's going on there. That's the basic thoughts here. I will mention real quickly, there's one constitutional crisis, I guess you could call it, because there's only one item being hotly debated right now that's even mentioned in the Constitution. But it wasn't the original Constitution. It's from the 14th Amendment after the Civil War that basically was crafted to give all of these people that were enslaved in this country, the fact that they were a long time, in most cases, Americans, and their offspring were Americans born here. It was to give them full citizenship rights. And the birthright citizen clause in the 14th Amendment is specifically written to accommodate American slaves and make them full citizens with full rights. And again, make their offspring American citizens. But the fact that the language was not written very well by whatever constitutional scholar or lawyer wrote this passage, it talks about people born or naturalized in the United States have full rights of citizenship. But it also says a line that's very interesting that says, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Somebody on the legal level's got to interpret that. My law degree is from Target, but it's framed over here on the wall. It's really nice. But my legal training tells me that subject to the jurisdiction thereof means that anybody who's not in this country legally, just because they drop a child here, that child doesn't qualify for American citizenship. An immigrant can stagger from El Salvador, hitch rides, whatever, as they cross 5 feet over the United States border and have their child right out there on the prairie, that child by right now, by definition, is an American citizen. But that's got to be challenged. If this person that has this child in America does so on our soil, but is not subject to the jurisdiction thereof, which basically means that they're not in the country legally. Therefore, they are not in compliance. They are not subject to the jurisdictional thereof. It's ridiculous. There's not another country in the world that has people. Let's say they get a visa to come to America for a week or 2 weeks and have a child here. And that child's an American for foreign parents that don't live here and aren't going to be here. That's absurd. It's not the intent of the people who wrote this amendment. It was clearly just for the slave question and was rightfully crafted for that, because those people certainly had been in the country and were American citizens. And finally, due to this was really the last great initiative of Abraham Lincoln before his assassination, was to make whatever deal necessary to get the 14th Amendment passed, where there was fierce opposition from the Democrat Party, by the way. So that comes down to the fact that birthright citizenship, how it's being defined and how it's been defined all these years, needs to be challenged, needs to be picked apart legally. The Supreme Court ruling on it is going to be the ultimate decision. The case will be made at some point and it will get there. And however it goes, I'll be satisfied. If the Supreme Court says, nope, that means anybody born in these borders is a citizen. But I think, once again, it has to be somebody here legally at the very least, not just some immigrant who straggles into the, and it's not an immigrant, I just violated my biggest rule. Immigration is a legal process. A migrant, an intruder that happens to come and have a baby in this country, that child should not be a United States citizen just because they're born within 10 yards of the border. That's absolutely ridiculous. That wasn't the intent of this amendment, and it needs to be looked at and legally challenged to the full extent all the way to the Supreme Court and let them make a ruling, because that's what they're in place for. There's a reason that we have three branches of the government: in executive, in judicial, and in legislative. All of them have a separate role. This is their role to decide this question, and it should have been decided long before now. Anyway, constitutional crisis, BS. It's not a constitutional crisis. It's a existential crisis for the Washington swamp, because they see Trump is sinking their battleship right now. Their unlimited cash cow USAID was the first target, as rightfully so. Now the Do Nothing Department of Education, disaster relief, all these different things need to be coordinated on each state's level. The federal government was never intended to be in charge of that, and it's too big and too bloated and too corrupt to be in charge of anything. It needs to be cut down to size, to bare minimums. That's what needs to happen. Contact your senators and congressmen and tell them, get on board. Let's get this done. Let's get this country going 100,000 miles an hour and achieve exactly what it was crafted to achieve. I'm Kip Kiefer. We'll see you next week right here on Need to Know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.